Hello, and welcome to episode number 17 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. When it comes to proposed hypotheses offered to explain the intelligences behind the UFO phenomenon, the extraterrestrial hypothesis is still the most common idea put forth. For the majority of the population, when confronted with the notion that a supposedly non-human intelligence is here, traversing the skies above our heads in technologically sophisticated craft that runs circles around our most cutting-edge aerospace vehicles, space aliens still seems like the most logical explanation. In fact, for much of the general public, this is really considered the only logical option. For those who've studied the UFO phenomenon in any detail and for any length of time, however, it quickly becomes clear, for those really open to considering all of the data with an open mind, that is, that the extraterrestrial hypothesis on its own seems lacking. And for much of this small subset of the population actually paying close attention to this phenomenon, something like the interdimensional hypothesis rises up as a leading option. Other possibilities also exist, of course, one of them being the crypto-terrestrial hypothesis, which we've already discussed in some detail on a previous podcast, suggesting that a sister humanoid species may be cohabitating the planet with us in a stealthy way, employing masterfully skillful techniques of misdirection to encourage our belief that what we've been dealing with are solely extraterrestrial visitors. A fourth hypothesis, positing beings known as ultra-terrestrials, which is some combination of crypto-terrestrial and interdimensional, is a notion we will be pursuing in a future episode. Now, if you've studied the UFO phenomenon for any length of time, whether you're familiar with this particular podcast or not, you've likely come across all of the above hypotheses. There are still other options, however. Some of them involve elements that ask us to think a little more outside the box, introducing additional variables such as time travel to the mix. In this week's podcast, I'd like to explore one of the lesser-known hypotheses that does exactly this. This particular hypothesis doesn't have a commonly recognizable name we can refer to, because it is in some ways a hybrid version of other hypotheses. If one were to give it a name, something like the post-terrestrial hypothesis works well enough. Though, as you'll soon find out, it also involves elements of extraterrestriality as well. It is also intimate to us because it supposedly involves actions by a time-traveling, non-conventional future human population whose aim is to avert some imminent disaster in human history by enacting some form of mass intervention accomplished mostly on the subconscious level by primarily psychical means. This particular hypothesis is, from my point of view, both insightful and elegant. Insightful in that it offers potential explanations for particular data points commonly found within the literature of the UFO phenomenon that other hypotheses simply ignore. And elegant because it explains much of the data without resorting to the incorporation of notions such as interdimensionality and vast interstellar travel. Melding together elements from other hypotheses, it adds time travel to the equation and revolves around our own post-conventional human future. An exploration of a hypothesis suggesting that at least some of the beings described in the literature of the UFO phenomenon are actually our very own descendants, genetically altered and featuring a spliced genome incorporating traits of other species from our very own planet, who are perhaps here to try to avert some future apocalyptic wrong turn in human history, is the topic of this, the 17th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. Now, as we begin today's podcast, a quick reminder that what we collectively, colloquially call the phenomenon is almost certainly actually phenomena from multiple players. And this makes it notoriously difficult to tease out intentions and methods being employed. For instance, part of today's discussion involves depictions of what are commonly referred to as the Greys. but the literature is not consistent when it comes to people's depictions of the graves. And because it's become part of our folklore now, some people may be just unconsciously repeating what they've already heard or are ascribing to the graves these stereotypical traits. Something to keep in mind as we proceed. I'd also like to add that when it comes to trying to figure out which non-conventionally human groups are here visiting our planet and our civilization and perhaps influencing us, I think the answer is all of the above. And by that I mean, I think ultimately we will likely find that the sources include extraterrestrial, interdimensional, cryptoterrestrial, ultra-terrestrial, and, as we're discussing today, post-terrestrial. I think all of these may be in the mix. That makes it fascinating, but also complex to try and parse out. With that said, let's turn to today's consideration of this new hypothesis, which I'm calling the post-terrestrial hypothesis, which posits that some of the beings here trying to intervene and influence us are actually our own descendants. But they are not conventionally human, not in a way that we would recognize. They have elements of our genome, but spliced into that genome are elements from other creatures of the Earth, both insectoid and reptilian, perhaps. And they are here in aims of averting some sort of apocalyptic turn in human history. Now, I would like to proceed with this podcast in a similar way to what we did in the episode on the crypto-terrestrials. What I mean is, I would like to consider 8 different ways that I think the data fits well with this hypothesis that these beings, or at least some of them, may be our own descendants in some form who've time-traveled to try and avert some disaster that awaits us in our future. Okay, let's kick it off with number 1 in terms of the aspects of the data behind the UFO phenomenon that fit well with this post-terrestrial hypothesis. Number 1 is it doesn't necessitate vast interstellar travel. And again, in case you're not familiar, the most common argument against the extraterrestrial hypothesis is that if these beings are supposedly coming from other star systems or even more so other galaxies, that the distances involved are so astronomical, pun intended, that it seems unlikely that even if they had vehicles approaching the speed of light, the travel would take far too long. This is the common argument against the ET hypothesis, and this post-terrestrial hypothesis would do away with it because these would be our own descendants who are not coming from far away in terms of space, but rather in terms of time, our very future, in fact. Okay, let's move on to number 2. And like the crypto-terrestrial hypothesis, number 2 is that this post-terrestrial hypothesis doesn't necessitate dimension-hopping capabilities. Again, part of the idea with the interdimensional hypothesis, as well to some degree with the ultra-terrestrial hypothesis, is that these beings have the capacity to dimension-hop. And that explains why they can disappear or materialize right in front of our eyes, for instance. With this post-terrestrial hypothesis, we do away with that need because, again, they are in our own dimension, but from our future. Number 3 is means and motive. Now, in terms of means, if they are from our future, then obviously they would be technologically much more advanced than us. But beyond that, they would also have a much greater capacity to manipulate and understand consciousness, which would explain some of what we see with the UFO phenomenon literature. And in terms of motive, their motive is that their very own future is at stake, that by changing our timeline, they may change theirs. As we discussed with the crypto-terrestrials, if you are native to the Earth, you would have a vested interest in changing our behavior. How much more so is that the case if they are our very own descendants? Number 4 has to do with the strange encounters people have with these beings that seem to suggest something symbolic in nature is intended. And here I'd like to quote from Jacques Vallée. Quote, "The UFOs are physical manifestations that cannot be understood apart from their psychic and symbolic reality. What we see here is not an alien invasion. It is a spiritual system that acts on humans and uses humans. Unquote. Now, Jacques Vallée was one of the first researchers to point out the absurdity of these encounters, both the medical encounters as well as the sexual encounters. If the goal of these others is supposedly to gain our genetic material, they could do so in much simpler ways. Indeed, with our very own 21st century technology, we can easily gain access to a person's entire genome through a single strand of hair. So why the need to abduct people, supposedly, and take them on board these spacecraft to do these procedures? It just doesn't add up. Unless, of course, what we experience is just a surface layer. What we remember is just a surface layer. That is, these medical and sexual encounters that are very strange. But if the change actually intended is a subconscious one, achieved through psychical means, then this might make more sense. This is exactly what Vallée is suggesting, and I think there's strong support for this argument. That was argument 4A, suggesting that the means are symbolic. Number 4B is closely related because it again has to do with the absurdity of some of these encounters. And I call this the Trojan horse effect. Absurdity allows for an unconscious imprinting, like subliminal advertising, and allows for a transformation to happen under the very noses of the society's elite without them realizing it, because they remain largely oblivious, because the absurdity itself leads them to believe it is nothing of substance. They ignore it while it does its work anyway, like a Trojan horse. And this certainly fits with the data. Even today, in 2021, it's extremely difficult to get the mainstream media or the mainstream scientific establishment or academia to take this topic seriously. It's almost like a mass trance effect. Either way, by using a Trojan horse effect with absurdity, the change keeps happening while the larger society doesn't even talk about it. That's what I suggest is happening. We see evidence of it all around us. Let's move on to number 5 in terms of an aspect of the data that supports this notion of a post-terrestrial species visiting us. Here we speak of physiological traits. When we think about the beings that are encountered, they are strangely terrestrial. First, we have the humanoid aspect, two arms, two legs, two eyes, and whatnot. That seems awfully similar to us, almost like a being native to the Earth anyway. But you also have other beings that are encountered that also have ties to the Earth, or so it would seem. Here I speak of insectoid beings like the praying mantis that is 7 feet tall, or the reptilians that are often encountered. Some have suggested that the grays may actually be a combination of all of these elements. Now again, you have to ask yourself, if these beings are coming from far-flung star systems, why would they look so much like creatures native to the Earth, whether humanoid or a praying mantis insectoid type or reptilian type? Why would that be the case? It seems to suggest that perhaps they are native to the Earth. And what this argument is suggesting with this post-terrestrial hypothesis is that a future genome has spliced together each of these creatures to create a new post-conventional human being. Again, our very descendants. I really don't think you can overstate this aspect of the data. The fact that these creatures so often resemble Earth-like creatures suggests to me that they are somehow connected to the Earth. Now, this post-terrestrial hypothesis is one option that explains this, that somehow a future version of us has spliced together the genomes of different species native to the Earth. Other hypotheses also explain this, for instance, the crypto-terrestrial and to some extent, the ultra-terrestrial. But this is definitely a weak point in the ET hypothesis. The chances that a species coming from some far-flung star system would have traits so similar to Earth-like creatures is highly unlikely. Let's move on to number 6. Number 6 is closely associated to number 3, which was means and motive. The motive was they are trying to avert some future catastrophe in human history. Now, there is plenty of evidence suggesting we are on the precipice of disaster that's much more ominous and pressing than in previous human eras. Think about the worst that could happen with a civilization that had clubs and spears. At the most, you might wipe out a tribe or two, but the human species would not die off, and the biosphere of the planet would not be affected. Clearly, that's not the case now. With nuclear weapons, we could wipe out the entire human civilization, or a very large part of it, as well as destroy aspects of the biosphere, which might do away with the rest of the humans that don't die in the initial nuclear attack, as well as much of the other species of the Earth who are innocent bystanders. Add to that the notion of bioweapons. We've just come through a pandemic. We're still trying to recover from it. Imagine what happens in a few years when bioweapons can unleash even worse viruses upon the population. This is the precipice we stand at the edge of at this moment. And again, while a benevolent ET species may be concerned about this as brothers in our cosmic family, no species would have a greater vested interest in this than our future descendants that are trying to change the course of human history that affects them directly. Now let's move on to number 7, which is closely associated to number 6, because it has to do with a threat, though the threat is not nearly as apparent as that of nuclear war or bioweapons. In fact, most of the human population is unaware of it. It's flying under the radar. I speak of the technological singularity upon which we are approaching. I've discussed this before. We have remarkably challenging times ahead when it comes to our navigating of the tailoring of life, when we can change the genome, when we can custom make human beings the way we want to, and as we are on the verge of developing artificial intelligence that could become so intelligent and dominant and fast that it could challenge our very domination on the planet. It could change our future altogether. Again, for many people, perhaps for some of you out there in the audience, this is flying under the radar. And yet I see it like a tsunami that is rushing toward us. Every year, our technological speeds and capacities are growing exponentially. We will reach this technological singularity within our lifetimes. And that proposes massive challenges for us. What if it is this that these others are most concerned about, and they've come into our era to try and avert a future disaster? Let's move on to number 8, the final point in favor of this post-terrestrial hypothesis suggesting that these others, or at least some of them, may be our very future descendants who are vastly genetically different than us, and who have genomes spliced together from different creatures of the Earth. I speak here of their intense interest in us. It almost seems archaeological in nature. At times, it seems like they have an interest in us the same way that we have an interest in ancient human civilizations that have long since died off. And beyond that, they also seem to have an interest in our nature, in our emotional nature, for instance. Then in some ways, some have suggested that the Greys are more like a hive mind. What if future changes in the human genome create this hive mind, that in trying to accomplish new things by altering our genetic blueprint, they lose things, and by coming back to our time, they are trying to rectify that by changing the very course of our future? And now I'd like to add a few additional thoughts for your consideration when it comes to this post-terrestrial hypothesis. Firstly, what if the symbolic nature by which they interact with us, which almost seems to happen in an altered state of consciousness or an alternate realm, what if that's the case because this time travel necessitates this? Here I'm thinking about what we've learned with remote viewing. We have found already in our very era that we live in now that one can time travel in a way. via remote viewing. Yes, indeed, that means that not only can you visit any place on the Earth, or another planet for that matter, in the present moment, but you can also move into the past or the future with remote viewing as well. But you tend to be an observer rather than a direct participant. There have even been experiments, supposedly successful, where people have gone on board a plane that crashed. They have gone back in time, found themselves on that plane observing and seeing, for instance, where a bomb was placed, trying to figure out what actually caused that plane to come down. What's astonishing is people on that plane supposedly notice the witness. They become part of that timeline, but indirectly. They can't directly change events, but they can change things symbolically because the witnesses observe them. What if something similar is happening with these others? That they are us time traveling from the future and interacting with us in a symbolic nature, somewhat like we see in remote viewing. Something else for you to consider is this notion of extraterrestriality. I mentioned in the introduction that that element comes in as well. And why? Well, because of course, in our very own future, we will very likely colonize other planets. We will become an ET species on our own. In fact, within the next few years, within a decade or so anyway, we are going to launch rockets that go to Mars. People have already volunteered to go there. They will live and die on Mars and supposedly will give birth to the first post-terrestrial human beings. That's within the next 10 years. Imagine what might happen in decades and centuries beyond that. Imagine what happens when we really begin to play with the genome. That may be what these others are, at least some of them. Furthermore, this time travel piece might help explain why we run into humanoid species so often in the UFO phenomenon literature. Supposedly, human beings are encountered from all sorts of different planets, both nearby and far. What if that's because they are not in the present moment, but actually time travelers, our future descendants, who've colonized vast aspects of our galaxy and beyond, and they are time traveling and meeting us now. And along the way, their genomes have been changed. That's why we see these hybrid beings that seem somehow like us and in some ways different. In regards to that last point, it's also well within the realm of possibility that we ourselves were seeded on this planet by an even older humanoid form. It would be hubris for us to assume we are the root of the tree. We may be the branch of the tree, or leaves on a branch of the tree. And in that sense, when we encounter these other species that look remarkably humanoid, that seem to have aspects of the very same genome that we have, it's because we're meeting brothers and sisters, as it were, from different planets, different star systems, perhaps different galaxies, and that we're all a part of a seeding process that began a long time ago and has been happening over vast timescales. Finally, I would like to leave you with a couple of quotes. First, let's hear again from Jacques Vallée, who said, quote, "We are faced with a technology that transcends the physical and is capable of manipulating our reality, generating a variety of altered states of consciousness and of emotional perceptions. The purpose of that technology may be to change our concepts of the universe." Unquote. And philosopher Jason Giorgiani says, quote, "The Greys may be inviting a metamorphosis of humanity in its larval state." Unquote. Lastly, when we step back and consider the data we've discussed over the last 17 episodes of this podcast, one point seems clear. The others do not seem to be here as merely passive observers. They are not merely witnesses. No, in fact, change seems to be at the root of their presence here. That this particular point in history seems somehow significant, and their mission here is to change us, perhaps change our perception of reality, and thus change how we live. We may be at a unique pivot point in our history, not only in terms of our potential survival, though that may very well be at stake, but also in terms of what we survive to become. And of course, if they are somehow us, perhaps even a future version of us, then we can understand why they're so interested in this process and so invested in the outcome. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, let's keep this conversation going and growing. If you found this material compelling today, please remember to like on YouTube or perhaps leave a review on the podcast platform you may be listening on. And please remember to let others know who you think may be interested in these related topics. I'd also remind you that there is a website dedicated to this podcast and its material. That is pointofconvergence.net. That is pointofconvergence.net. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.